Hello and welcome to the Cynic Weekly. I am your host, as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and this week I am joined by a fantastic panel of volunteers. The first one, of course, always my right-hand man, is Christopher Somani. How are you, sir?
Terrifically. It's Tuesday. It's 7:30. I'd rather not be anywhere else than in your company, my man.
We've had a busy weekend. We recorded the last Christmas special. Have you recovered?
It was a belter, wasn't it?
That drinking game, man. I mean, a rap-based drinking game, that we nailed that. Nailed it. Anyway, if you haven't had a chance to listen, get it listened to. I'm also joined this week by the greatest Dugan, I believe. Sorry, Stuart, but it is true. It's Ian Dugan.
How are you doing? I feel like I've had my Cynic report card, and it sort of says, must try harder, because next year I want to be on the invite for that Christmas party, because that sounded like a fucking superb party. So I'm gonna raise my level. Listen, I've seen where the bar is, and I'm gonna raise my game.
I'll be honest, you are fourth. You were next in line. see if there was another call off. You were in there, my man. So well done to that.
I'll take it over not being on the list at all. So that's
good.
Fine.
Good. Because there was some other people that didn't even come close. But anyway, we're not hating them too much. We're also joined from across the water by Eddie Walsh. Eddie, how are you doing, my man? The mustache is looking terrific.
Good, Louis. Thank you so much. Love being back on the People's Pod.
Eddie, just for clarity, you were joint fourth on the list to be on the last Christmas special, mate. So we're in esteemed company tonight, I'm telling you.
By the way, just so you know, everybody was joint fourth, maybe Keith and Brian. But anyway, so listen, we're celebrating. We've all got a can in hand. We're all, I think, hopefully still high. I know I certainly am from the weekend. Quadruple treble has been won. You know, just thoughts first off of the achievement itself. I've got to be honest, we spoke about it last week. I don't know, I just wasn't feeling it until the day, and it really, really probably until just not long before kickoff. I didn't really feel it building up to the game, or it's not really been on my radar this season, I think, because of 10 in a row, which I wanted to kind of touch on in a wee bit. But I must say, like, my God, did I feel it in terms of emotion during the game and after the game. And it's one of those, I think the point was made on one of the reaction podcasts, which I thought was brilliant, and it totally hit home for me, that it was one of those achievements and one of those victories that you immediately thought about the family that have brought you up to be a Celtic fan and things like that. And I found myself feeling very emotional. I mean, I could regret, to be honest with you. I was just felt so overcome with emotion, and I didn't expect that going into it, but a fantastic achievement. Ian, how did you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really strange having a Scottish Cup final in December. Like, that's the first, like, so I think, you know, chatting to Alan about it on the WhatsApp, and you know, it's so weird that we've had a Scottish Cup final and then we've got a really important league game 3 days later. We'll obviously come on to that, but I think the enormity of it, I think you felt the weight of it as you thought it was maybe not going to happen, and I think when it did happen, the only time I can remember that same sort of elation was Edward's goal against Hearts in the treble Scottish Cup final, where it was just like, and I remember grabbing Finlay, and like, you know, he was four at the time, he was six this time, and just being like, we will talk about this forever. Like, this is an incredible thing. Like, no team anywhere in the world has done this. And actually, it's really unlikely that anybody else will do this again. And actually, you know, what you guys were saying on the Christmas special about, you know, as you get further away from this, the enormity of it will get bigger and bigger. I mean, it's just incredible. It is such an achievement. And I know Gal tried his Brown's not a legend patter, but I think for Brown to captain us to both 9 in a row and a quadruple treble, he might not be an immortal like a Lisbon Lion, but he's right up there for me.
Totally agree. Totally agree. So, Manny, yourself?
First thing that Ian said there, Scottish Cup final shouldn't be in December. Obviously, it was because of circumstances, but Scottish Cup finals are all about checking out if it's going to be in the mid-teens or if we're going to be creeping into the low 20s and whether we should wear shorts. Is it acceptable? A Don shouldn't wear shorts, as we know, for the Sopranos, but should Can Celtic fans wear shorts for the Scottish Cup final? Well, we couldn't at the weekend, obviously, but I think Ian really hit the nail on the head. The enormity of it became very apparent when it looked as if we might have messed up. I think, you know, we were a wee bit blasé about it because of everything else that's going on around with our league form. But at that moment when you thought we might not have got across the line, it smacked me right in the face in terms of how big it was. And the emotion, I mean, to win a cup final against a lower league team on penalties, you know, that should, you know, with the standards we set, we should, we would be thinking that's maybe not the way we expected to do it and that's not good enough. But the emotion when Ayer put that penalty kick in just pulled out of me. It was frightening. And I'm not afraid to say that there was a few tears when that happened. There's an awful lot about it. I mean, you could do a podcast simply on, you know, not a reaction, like a proper podcast, thinking about the whole events around it, what it led up to and where we are and all that sort of stuff. For me, it was almost like it was such a great achievement. The emotion was great. There was part of it just seemed as if it was kind of the closing of a chapter as well, which is weird because of when it took place. I mean, I think the emotions would be even higher if that was the normal part of the season, and you know, we had, you know, it was the bookend to last season or whatever. But I think as a standalone game, as the end point of a quadruple treble, it was everything that it should have been in terms of the drama and all that. And it meant so much to me. It is strange though that we kind of plod on and whatever. And I think as a support, we are a very fickle support and our standards are so high. We could be very disparaging about this game in a couple of, you know, weeks because of the, you know, the games we've got coming up. But as I said, on a last at the weekend, with distance, this will only get better as well. I think, I'm even just now I'm thinking about it and it's, you know, you're just feeling it all coming back to you. So I think what we really should do is just say, what an unbelievable, phenomenal achievement, and just enjoy that just now, because, you know, it was remarkable. It's not going to happen again. And what happens in the future shouldn't colour it. It probably will at the start, but it shouldn't, you know, when you appreciate it in the fullness of the future, you know.
Eddie, it was a roller coaster of emotions all through the game. How was it for you?
You know what? I found myself kind of feeling a lot more positive before the game. And absolutely, you know, during the first half, you know, you kind of felt like it was just going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, the chances were there. We were playing well. And you just felt like it was just going to be a complete smashing. But as the game went on, it just got incredibly stressful. Like Ian and Chris both said, you know, you realize what was at stake as the game went on. And as it went further and further into it, you know, I was sitting on my couch just sweating, really. Just really, really stressed about the whole thing. And I mean, we are definitely going to look back at this as a classic game. I feel like obviously it was a little bit harder than maybe it should have been. I think Stu said it on one of the reaction pods, like this will be a game you'll go back and watch, you know, as stressful as it is. And like Chris said, that penalty from Ayer, just, it was almost, the ball was so smashed perfectly. It hit the net exactly as my emotions just burst. You know, I feel like it was a perfect end to the game. And I mean, this is just not going to be replicated. And it's definitely going to stick in my memory as a classic game and just such an enormous achievement.
I think as well, it's of a man of a certain age like myself, this is almost kind of the parallels in my mind were being drawn, different circumstances to 1994 and the League Cup final against Raith Rovers. Now, that game, it was our chance to win the first trophy in 6 years, so the circumstances are completely different. Well, we're trying to win a 12th in 4 seasons, which is utterly phenomenal. But, you know, if Hazard hadn't saved those two penalties, that this final would have been consigned to the Big Burnley Fire alongside the Raith Rovers final, alongside Seville, alongside numerous others that I have never watched again nor ever will watch again. You know, in one kick of a ball, completely changed that. It is a game I probably will watch back again in future years. But it just shows you the margins in football. They're so fine, especially when you're not firing in all cylinders.
I've almost become like a bit of a meme for sort of hating on Ryan Christie, right? So this is not coming from a place of hate. But see, when Christie missed the penalty, I was glad it was him. Because, and I know that sounds off, just wait, let me finish, right? The way that McStay missed that penalty against Raith Rovers and had to carry that himself. If Ryan Christie is a guy who actually Celtic's a bit of a job for him and not a passion, Gal said about having McGregor to miss, I could not have had it if it was any of the rest of them. If Christie can genuinely kind of create a sort of a barrier between the emotion of playing for Celtic and the job that he does, then do you know what? I think he could carry that, because he'll go on and do you know what? I think his biggest passion is playing for Scotland and playing for football. I don't think it would have impacted him. I think for somebody like if McGregor had missed, or somebody who was going to be like a sort of one club guy, I couldn't have taken having another Paul McStay. Is that really harsh, or is that?
It's fucking snidey, man. Ah, poor boy. You don't see the goal he scored. I mean, oh my God. That was an act of genius.
You know what? It was. I'd
be reticent to hate on anybody.
See the finish? The finish was
oh, the free kick he gave away. Come on, Gal. Come on.
No, that's the best and worst of them.
Wait a minute, this is classic Chris Gallagher. He just can't help himself. See, if you want to come in, say something, Christopher. Do not put it in the chat, but he's spot on, because Ryan Christie was one of the biggest culprits in our capitulation in the second half. And that's the whole thing about Christie. He goes from the sublime to the dreadful very, very quickly. Christie is a guy who I know who possesses immense talent, but I wouldn't be too disappointed if he left. And it's just because he's an incredibly frustrating man. Gal, gonna fucking stop putting it in the chat, mate. Come on, speak. He's saying he needs coached and things like that. Yes, this would come into the whole thing about whether or not the coaching's good enough at Celtic just now. But Christie, I mean, it's like Tam. Tam can pull moments of magic out, you know. By the way, it would have been nice if he'd come on at the weekend, Louis.
I assume he was at the back of the World Cup.
We'll just leave that there. You know, it's like that. They could sort of players that can pull absolute genius out and then infuriate you for the rest of the game. That's the way I felt about Christie at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players need coached, to be honest. I mean, Christie is just one of many, obviously. But yeah, I mean, as soon as he hit that ball, you knew it was going in, really. I mean,
but he had it almost before. He had an almost carbon copy shot later on. And it just goes fucking miles wide.
That's the thing. I mean, how many of those does he actually take during a game, and how many does he actually hit?
But then it is exactly like I saw a frame by frame of it versus the goal versus Aberdeen, and it's exactly the same technique.
Yeah,
but yeah, sometimes it still goes horribly even in the same game.
One of the things I heard Neil Lennon say, I think it was on the Agenda. I think the Agenda had the audio straight after the game in Lennon's interview, and he was saying you know, he came across just very emotional, and he spoke about the fact that he is the first manager who's also played for the club that's done the treble, and it's clearly been a massive marker for him as an individual, something that he was really, really desperate to do. And we all kind of thought that, but I think, to be fair to Lennon, hearing that emotion in his voice, you could get a better understanding of how very real this has been for him. And it struck me when I heard it today, I thought, I didn't feel like that. Like, see, for me, I've not even thought about the quadruple treble until game day. But clearly this has been on the mind of him and been on the mind of the squad. And it made me think, I wonder, and I'm not saying it's an excuse, and it's definitely not, but I wonder how much the pressure of that game, that I didn't even think that was a high-pressured game, to be perfectly honest with you, I wonder how much that pressure has had an impact on Lennon and on the players, because it very much sounded the way he spoke as if it had been a massive thing for them, a massive burden, and it made me think a wee bit different about possibly things that have gone on. I would love to see it. I'd love to see that team come out and playing a lot more freer and not having a big amount of pressure on their heads. But I certainly thought it was interesting. It was something I'd not thought of, just quite the magnitude of this achievement for the manager and obviously for the players.
There was, like, so sometimes when Lennon, and I think we'll probably come on to a situation later on where sometimes Lennon says stuff in a press conference and I'm just like just ignore it. I think sometimes he says something and it kind of cuts him to the core and you can see inside his soul for a second. And see, when he said that thing about being a band of one, I think that's him. I think he sees himself as like a sort of lone wolf. There's nobody else there. He's by himself and he's kind of having to do it all himself. Now, I don't think that should be the case, but I think that's what he thinks.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, I don't think anyone denies that he has felt this way about the club and about this season in particular. You know, that's there. Sometimes to his and the team's detriment, as we've seen. But yeah, I mean, you can't take the achievement away from him, and you can't question his passion for the club and what he actually wants to achieve. I think it's just a matter of putting it into action. And maybe sometimes he feels too much, you know, that's where he does need help from coaching staff, from the players especially. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he's felt this way. Which definitely makes it tough as far as the season's gone. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, he wants us almost more than anyone.
So, manager, I think we've been too fixated on 10 in a row and you know, kind of overlooked as a support the quadruple treble, because maybe in the player's mind and in Lennon's mind, this was the first thing to reach. You know what I mean? This was the first priority because it was coming first. And then maybe now focus will really turn to 10 in a row. Do you think we've maybe let the side down a wee bit and been too fixated on that goal?
The horse is well bolted with that. I remember standing in the Juventus Stadium in 2013 when we were getting tuffed 5-0 on aggregate by Juventus, and the fans were chanting, "Here we go, 10 in a row." 7 years ago that was. So I've said it, I'll repeat it. It's been our calling card for as long as I can remember. So see now to turn around and say when there's a possibility we won't do it, that it doesn't really matter. I don't like that. I really don't like that. But I do think that that's played a part in us overlooking the achievements we've done to date. And we completely overlook the quadruple treble. But it would be totally disingenuous for the support to turn around and now and go, "Ah, well, you know, we've done 9 in a row twice and we've done the quadruple treble. It doesn't really matter. Come on, we've thrown our eggs in one basket with the 10 in a row." However, as I said, if the worst happens and we don't win the league this season, those achievements do stand on their own 2 feet. But we can't turn around just now and say it. We need to play this out to a conclusion. But you're absolutely right. We have overlooked it. We have overlooked it. But we've overlooked it for not just this season, Louis, for several years now.
So you talked, Sirmani, at the start about closing of a chapter, and I think I said this to Barry and the boys last night. I kind of wonder if that's going to be it for this season. And I'm not saying that 10 in a row isn't massive or that we should give up on it, but I just feel like it feels like
he's fucking throwing the 10 away.
No, I'm not. I'm saying there was like it felt like there was a finality of emotion that went with it, and I worry that that's going to be it for us this season. That's my gut feel, is that we will have to go back and make those mental gymnastics that Sirmani's talking about.
I was pretty emotional the next day when I was dying a hangover.
I mean, I would hope that this game is a watershed moment, a catalyst, you know, seeing what we can do and what we have achieved over these last seasons and years. You know, we put together some decent performances recently, and this could only just propel us on, you know. I mean, we just have to use this as a catalyst for the rest of the season, because, you know, you can't think of it as something final. There's something final to, you know, the quadruple treble, but at the same time, that should empower us to, you know, realize how dominant we can be and how dominant we have been. So, I mean, I would hope that it would just spur us on.
Our esteemed producer would like a word.
I just think it would be remiss of me to not come in and say this. So Louis's quite emotional just now, genuinely. And I like to see it. I think Sunday was absolutely huge. I think we're all emotional. But if you go back 3 or 4 weeks, the bile, we were all spouting about Neil Lennon and what he'd done. And also, if we go to Ibrox and we perform the way we have performed at Ibrox, do you know what I mean? Like, we need to keep it all in perspective. Everyone deserves their credit for what happened on Sunday. And it's really, really, really unfortunate that this cup final has came in the middle of a season, because you can't divorce it. So the next game's on Wednesday, and it's great, but we need to put it in context of where we are this season. We just do, and it's not really fair, but that's it.
Do you know what? I mean, you're spot on, Gil. And the fact of the matter is, even during the game, you were looking at it in two contexts. This is history on the line, just win, and, oh, well, that two-game win was a lot of crap. Look how fragile we are again. That's the weirdness about this situation and the cup final being in December, because we all thought that. You know, it was all the issues of this season were laid bare in that game, you know, and we managed to get over the line, right? But ultimately, as a standalone, the fragility, another two-goal lead thrown away, you know, the minute a scintilla of pressure was put on us, we kind of capitulated yet again. And in terms of where we are just now, in terms of the current season, everything came flooding back. Oh, well, we're not going to win at Ibrox. There's a good chance we'll drop points in the three games before then. That's the nature of where we are just now. But then when the penalty kick went in, when Ayer scored that penalty kick, all that was part in the emotions of everything that's gone before it came out. And it's an utterly, utterly bizarre situation, because when we come to talk about Ross County tomorrow, we're going to go, do you know what I mean? But you're saying that you can't divorce it. You have to divorce it in terms of how you think about it, because we're going to give Neil Lennon credit for what he's done, but we're also going to go, you know, it's time for a change still, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just one final point. It's just unfortunate, the timing, because if this was last May, then he gets all the credit in the world, because you've got a summer. And then the kid.
Yeah, but I disagree with you when you say I disagree when you say you can't divorce it. My point and where my emotion was coming from was listening to Neil Lennon, the man, speak about his own personal ambition as an individual. And I think you can totally divorce that from everything. I'm not saying that Neil Lennon's the answer. I haven't changed my opinion on Neil Lennon. I still think Neil Lennon isn't the man that's going to take us to 10 in a row, sadly. But I think when you hear him speak and you know, it made me understand the significance of the achievement for him as a man, which I didn't think about. I totally overlooked. And I think sometimes you have to remember he is a guy who loves Celtic and he's his own individual. Often, we want to bash him and we don't think he's good enough and all that sort of stuff. But that's us talking about him as a football manager. That, for me, that interview was all about Neil Lennon, the man. And that's where I would divorce it.
I think those two things could be, you know, they're not mutually exclusive, as we've seen, you know. Having the love that he does for Celtic doesn't necessarily make him, you know, who we need right now, which is apparent in, you know, some of the things that he said in the press conference earlier today. Like, you know, it's back to the same stuff. Just like the second half was back, it's back to the same, you know, there was nothing different in that second half than any other second half, like, you know, Lille or any place that we've played horribly in the second half and given up two goal leads. So, you know, I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think you could definitely, I definitely feel for Lennon as far as, you know, him wanting so badly to make this happen. But it's clear that there is, you know, so much wrong. And that just means, and apparently, you know, he doesn't have enough time to fix that. You know, those are his own words, which is just, you know, I don't even know how you can come out of a game like that and still say, you know, the things that he's been saying all along when it's just glaringly obvious to everyone that there are still huge, huge, you know, deficiencies.
You know, you can allow yourself 60 hours to divorce it and then put it back into the context of the shite of the rest of the season.
I mean, the fact
of course, yeah.
If it finishes one each tomorrow, we're right back to where we were.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I feel, so, man, you told us to be positive here. The biggest fucking downer of the night.
I'm definitely
you
not.
You fucking are.
What I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to talk about the timing of it all, because I feel for the players as well. Because that happened at the weekend, and we're now 2 days later. You know, normally they would be heading off for...
They should be in Marbella.
Exactly. They should be getting their 1 week's holiday before they go back to the Champions League. That's my point. You know, they don't have that mental break, you know? And what I will say about Lennon here is, you're right, Louis. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that we kind of gave too much credence to Lennon as a man and how much that meant to him and all that sort of stuff. I don't think we've given enough credence either to, you know, the timing of all this, you know, a cup final like that for a quadruple treble, and then they've got to go straight back in and perform again, or they've got a support who are going to be baying for blood. It is a bizarre situation, and I do think we really need to kind of go, what a phenomenal achievement. But I also know as a support, we ain't going to let up. We are not going to let up. And that's, and I suppose what I'm saying is I feel for the players and Neil Lennon just now because of that, but that's the way it is at Celtic.
Right, let's before we get to some more of the negatives, before we talk about Ross County, let's talk about some of the positives. Shut up and I'll mute you. Right, so penalty. Pananka, right into right over Gordon's head, scanted him in front of everybody. Fucking superb. Come on, let's talk about that.
So I saw somebody put up a video talking about, like, so obviously it wasn't McCoist that said that it was disrespectful. It was Neil McCann who was apoplectic, but it was McCoist in one of the penalty shootouts at the 10 and 6s, and he Panenka's the Dundee United keeper. It must have been, I can't remember who it was, but it's fucking, like, he does exactly the same thing. I mean, it's obviously a smaller goal. It's a very impressive skill, but, you know, like, to say that as if no
one... Ali Maxwell? Was it Ali Maxwell?
I think it might have been Maxwell, aye.
But I mean, to do that to him, and then, as I think it was Gal who made the point in the reaction, it's the fact that Gordon reacts. He's so raging, try hitting with a ball and everything like that. Superb. The first half was dominant. I sat at half time thinking, I was kind of surprised at how easy it was. I really thought the Hearts would really make it difficult for us and be putting us under pressure and pressing. And but I mean, the game was totally dominant in their half of the pitch. Was that? This is going to sound negative, but was that because of what we done well, or was that because of their approach, do you think, or a combination of the two, Somani?
I wouldn't say it was negative, Louis, because I was in your house. I was hiding and behind your couch, and all I could hear was, by any means necessary, give Brown another contract. Honestly, you flip-flopped beyond belief. Unbelievable, mate. Yeah.
I've just made that shite patter up. Continue. Get to your point.
I think it summed up that as a squad, Celtic have phenomenally talented football players. I think the midfield three were pretty passive for Hearts, and that allowed Scott Brown, amongst others, to really, really kind of display their talents and show their dominance. I suppose we'll go on to the second half, but I think because they were very passive, we were able to force them back, and we were able to kind of highlight our strengths. So I think it would be remiss to say that it was all down to us. I think it was mostly down to us and our attacking intent right away. I also think Hearts were caught off guard with that, and that allowed us to kind of be as dominant as we were. I think if Eddie puts that one in,
I was going to say,
where Gordon saved it with his feet. I don't think it was a great shot from Eddie, and there was another one in the second half as well. Whereas I think if he'd placed that and it was 3-0, we're not having the drama that we had in the second half. When Gordon,
I don't think Eddie was very good. Again, I don't think he was very good. But again, kind of like Christy, he has that moment of class that he gets the pass marks because.
I suppose that's been the story of our season to a certain extent. We've got our best players show it in patches, and then they don't deliver it over a period of time. So, I suppose Saturday's game was almost a microcosm of the season, wasn't it? In terms of, we look at the players performing in a certain way and go, why are you not doing that all the time? And then in the second half, we're seeing what our deficiencies are. But the first half was great. I mean, you had Gal texting at half-time, organising reaction pods left, right and centre because, right, same as most of us, we thought we had it in the bag at half-time, didn't we?
I loved it when you'd said yes and then you pulled out, I can't react to this shite. Then we went on to one.
There was other reasons why I couldn't react, but I wasn't looking forward to reacting to that, put it up.
Ian, ahead of the game, obviously, the I think we were all very much looking forward to what the team was going to be and see what way Lennon went, if he kept with the team that we'd had winning, or if he was going to go the sentimental route and bring players back in. It was a wee bit of a mixture of both. We saw Connor Hazard staying goals, and we'll touch on that in a wee minute. But also, Scott Brown came back in, David Turnbull stayed. So there was a few changes. What did you think of the team when you saw it? Were you happy?
I think it was kind of a fair balance between the two. I think Lennon had definitely telegraphed the fact, by the way, Bruni's getting a game here. I think,
well, only because Soro had the shits.
Why did you make Shelley that up? Like, just don't, again, like, just some, as I say, sometimes you can stare in his eyes and see his soul. Other times you're like, you're talking absolute shite, move on. So I thought Brown starting was fine, but I think he absolutely wilted after sort of 55, 60 minutes. And that was clearly the point at which I wish he'd been withdrawn. And I think again, it's about how we're using Scott Brown. Scott Brown should not have played 110 minutes. Now, you can argue he's on there and he sets, it's his, God knows where he gets it from, but something inside him gets him, for that
desire.
I mean, just from nowhere, do you know, he was out on his feet. It was like Fury against Wilder. He's just and then out on his feet after that. So I thought that was fine. Greg Taylor instead of Laxalt, I was like, yeah, okay. Hazard we'll come to. So I thought Turnbull ahead of Rogic was the right call in terms of balance and sentimentality and form. And Rogic was shite when he came on. He did it.
Oh, fuck. Hell.
He did hee-haw.
See that one where he pulled it past the post in the last minute? Louis, did you have your Rogic quadruple treble t-shirt that you'd written on that white t-shirt you've got in Biro ready to go, aye.
Just going to kill you with silence, shall we, Fanny? Eddie, what about yourself? Was there, you know, Ian makes a point about Brown. I think Brown played well in the first half. I thought he'd done really well in the first half. But to be fair, most of the game, as I said earlier, was played in their half and they didn't maybe offer much. So he didn't have maybe as much to do defensively. But were you happy enough with how we went? And what did you think about the subs when they came on? Minus Tom Rogic, obviously, we can skip over that.
Yeah, I mean, Brown definitely had a decent first half. I think, you know, the easy thing should have been Sarr for Brown at, like Ian said, like 65 minutes, something like that. But, you know, we all know how Lennon likes to make subs or not make subs, you know, super late. But I think generally, like you said, the first half was great. Turnbull in particular, there was a couple of times. I remember one time in particular, he had his ball with his back to like three guys and then just completely turned them inside out. Obviously, set pieces are an absolute key. And that was my biggest thing in the first half. Taking him off was just, I don't know. It was mind-boggling for me. Personally, I think the X factor that his set pieces give, whether we're playing like absolute garbage, was needed.
There was also that one where he did the kind of three keepy ups and then plays across an absolutely perfect ball. You're just like, my God.
I mean,
do you think he's cemented this place? Do you think he's picked in the first team now?
To me, absolutely, 100%. I mean, he offers something that we've been crying out for, said it before. You know, linking up with, you know, players in front of him, and just him and Sorrow in particular look like they have something that could be really, really special. They are smart players. They always have their head up. They look confident, whereas, you know, a lot of players this season have not looked confident. So I think that is such a huge thing. And for me, he would start every game.
I would agree. I think, though, see the deficiencies we've seen defensively in the second half. Not putting it all down to a one-size-fits-all, ready-made solution to it. But Sorrow being on the park there, you know, why we've looked so good in the last two games, I think part of the reason was because Sorrow was there instead of Brown. Now, you have to credit Brown for the first half, although I do think the Hearts midfield were fairly passive at the time. Aaron said that in the WhatsApp. Can't remember who said what's happened to Brown. And Aaron said at that time, it's because he's playing against a passive Hearts midfield. And he was absolutely spot on.
Now, but he also did get to do his whole kind of shithousery with Halliday and Naismith. I mean, Naismith should have been sent off. Halliday wasn't that far behind him. That's something in his game that Sorrow would not have had.
Scott Brown used to do that shithousery though for 90 minutes.
I know.
He could have looked like an absolute dick with Andy Halliday ripping the piss out of him in the second half. Though. So see if you can see the job out, Ian. It's not.
Oh, you dare try and be positive, Ian. Focus on the fucking negatives.
Aye.
What I am.
His thinking. Legs have gone. He's shite.
He couldn't get the piss taken out of him.
This is utterly embarrassing here, Louis. Aye, that's you. You're a tit. Well, you know, this is you backing up Scott Brown. Eddie came in here before I.
All I'm saying is that Brown did a job for 60
45 minutes.
For 45 minutes that Sorrow wouldn't have done. But you're never going to take him off half time.
You know what, Ian? I feel like Sorrow has kind of. He has that tenacity. He has that.
But he wouldn't have bammed them up.
Absolutely not. No. But at the same time, he has the ability.
A different way.
Yeah, he has
Ian,
the ability.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in, Eddie. You're laughing now, Ian, because we won. And see, if we hadn't won, you wouldn't be fucking laughing then.
All right, Mr. Producer. I've clearly said that Brown should have been out of there after 55 minutes.
Cal's coming up with a by any means necessary chat. This is fantastic.
Honestly, you're sitting there on your neck with a blowtorch, wee man. Honestly,
this is
get
great.
Get Bruno out of here. Oh,
45 minutes masterclass. That's you. Get him another contract. What I'm saying is, right, Louis, question. I'll put you on the line. Ross County, tomorrow night. Who starts, Sorrow or Brown?
Sorrow every day of the week. I didn't want Brown to start. I didn't want him to play at all at the weekend. But that was superb.
Eddie, come back
by
in.
By any means necessary.
Give Eddie the floor here, because we're just getting noised up by this wee kit here. But Eddie...
Yeah, no, it's just making the point that Sorrow seems to have kind of everything we want, especially, you know, in the second half when we gave away a goal. You need to score, but you also need, you know, that defensive mentality, which I would say Sorrow might be the only one that kind of offers that, in the quality that we need right now. But also can literally, pick a pass. The guy always has his head up immediately. So it's exactly what we needed when we needed it. It just, the sub wasn't made. So.
The difference is he does the defensive work and then he plays the ball forward.
Absolutely.
The amount of, like, Brown 9 times out of 10 plays that ball sideways or backwards and it slows just kills it down. Everything. Yeah.
Let's talk about... You just want him to wind up.
I do want him to bam up Huns, right? Bamming up Huns is an important part of the... Listen, who starts on the 2nd of January? Sorrow.
There's no room for sentimentality.
I completely agree.
And I tell you what, see that first half performance from Scott Brown? See if you'd started Sorrow and somebody came off and you were bringing Brown on for the last 20 minutes, which we've been calling for the whole season, you get a different Scott Brown. That's when he should be coming on, not starting games. Oh, there's Louis.
Chris Gallagher and his puppet master, Chris Sormani, say, by any means necessary, get him to Australia. Anyway, so...
It's getting a flight to Melbourne for Scott Brown. Was it Melbourne? Who cares?
Anyway, right, let's talk about the penalties. So the main thing I think to discuss in the penalties is Connor Hazard. He's the hero. He saved two penalties. The second one, excellent, right into the corner. Young boy thrown in. We've spoke a lot about it. You know, everybody's got an opinion whether it was right or wrong that he was in there in the first place or whatever. I think it's fair to say he struggled in the game. He struggled with the physicality of it. You know, he's playing against men and he looked like a kid who was scared. He was just trying too hard at times and forgetting about the fundamentals and the basics of being a goalkeeper. I thought he just looked as if he was flapping and running about his box and just trying to do what he felt in the heat of the moment. To be fair, it comes with experience, doesn't it? I mean, you can't expect him to go in. I mean, no matter how many games he's played in the reserves or in youth football or whatever, when you get into such a high-pressured mental situation as playing a Scottish Cup final for a quadruple treble as your third game as a professional footballer, you're thrown in there playing against men who are trying to rough you up. You've got fucking Naismith trying to elbow you in the ribs and things like that. I mean, it's a hell of a lot for the kid. He struggled in a game. We know he was at fault for at least two of the goals, I would say. But he's the hero at the end of the day. And it's massive for the kid. And obviously the question is going to be who starts for the Ross County game. But before we get to that, can we just have a moment to recognise the boy done his proud in the end, did he not?
He did. He got the redemption with the penalties. I think we've all said it. The fact that we are on our third goalkeeper of the season and there's arguments being made for, well, you've got to stick with Hazard and play him through now and, you know, as if this is a good opportunity to develop him. I don't think Hazard is the right answer, but I think we're foolish if we ignore the fact that this situation has got so bad because whoever it is in the club hierarchy, whether it's Woods, whether it's Lennon, don't believe that Barkas or Bain are viable options. And I think this whole thing is a clusterfuck.
See, before I hold on, I'll be saying something, sorry, but Gal just does raise a good point. He has been out on loan. He's played about 30 games for Falkirk and Partick Thistle and Dundee.
Kept six clean sheets at Dundee.
Yeah, which is probably very difficult considering it's Dundee. But yeah, I just think the guy, I think he deserved to be in there. Personally, I thought he deserved after the other two games. I thought he looked a lot more assured in those two games. But maybe it was just part of the pressure of the game that it was. But I think we would all probably say, I wouldn't be putting him in against Ross County. But the thing is, with the likes of Barkas and Bain, I think Barkas has probably fallen victim to the kind of the nature of the season and again, what's at stake. You know, it seems like we have been too quick, or Lennon has been too quick to change it at the slightest sign of weakness rather than play it out. And I don't know if that's maybe to do with, you know, we've seen other players in other positions being really poor. I know this sounds daft, right, but he's seen his centre-backs, right, say the likes of Duffy, and Duffy's having bomb scares all the time. And it's like, as soon as anybody makes a mistake in terms of Barkas, he was out the picture. We'll try something else. Is he just maybe falling foul and not just giving Barkas a chance, somebody?
Well, that might be the case. I mean, I think Lennon's been scrambling for answers, and a lot of the time the answers change it. To go back to Hazard, though, see some of the mistakes he made. I think it screamed of inexperience rather than inability. Now, the one where Naismith prodded it just past the post where Ayer was with him, they were talking about Hazard falling back because he wasn't going to get there. Hazard could have got there. He just pulled back. And I think with experience, he would have followed that through. The Naismith goal with the header that was just over the line. See, with experience, he falls down there like a pack of cards.
Oh, it's a foul. Yeah.
It is a foul. But the thing is, Hazard... You take the contact and you just flop down, and that's a free kick any day of the week, right? So that's the sort of thing he can learn from. Now, there was other times where he looked nervy, but the guy's only 22 as well. So do I think that he's our first-choice keeper? I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I don't think so. My gut instinct says no. But I don't think what happened on before the penalties on Sunday necessarily writes the guy completely off. It just looked like a lot of it was inexperience and nerves for me.
Do you think he will start, though, because of the penalty saves?
Well, I'm saying there's no time for sentimentality in football, but I think it would still be pretty harsh to take him out, because it's not like they've got somebody waiting in the wings who's busting with confidence and who's really kind of nailed the position down. I don't think the Celtic support would be too bothered either if he started them. Nobody's crying out for Barkas to come in. Nobody's crying out for Bain to come back in. So I think he will start. I think he will. I think it would be incredibly harsh for the boys' confidence to take him out, you know.
I think that we're in a situation right now where we have no choice. He has to start. He has to start at Ross County. He has to start against Rangers. Like, what is going to happen? He's going to come in against Ross County. Then we're going to take him back out again, put Barkas in for a game. He's going to, I just think we're in a point right now where we need to stick with, consistent lineups. And Lennon was saying it today about how he doesn't have players available to consistently play them. I don't believe that, I feel like it's been changed up so many times, and that leads to a lot of the confusion. Whether through injury or inexperience, absolutely fair play to Hazard. Like he literally won us the game. But I think he looked really, really scared. And if he's scared there, I can't imagine what it's going to be like, against Rangers. I just think we need that consistency, and it needs to start now. Like after this game, we need to get consistent lineups at least, to get that partnership up, because you could just tell that, Hazard's coming in, he's working with Duffy, who just came back in. It's like it's all over the place, and I think there needs to be a communication and a bond formed, and that consistency to, know what you're doing. I just think we're stuck in a position now where he just has to play for me.
Before we move on to have a look ahead at the games coming up, just to kind of round off the chat about Sunday.
Can I say one more thing about the penalties?
Yes.
Did you not think it was really funny that Craig Gordon had all the directions for all the players written on his water bottle, and he still fucked up 4 out of 5 of them, got nowhere near them. Like, didn't matter that he knew what way they were going to go. Like, McGregor's penalty, he goes the right way, and it's such a well-struck penalty, and he's such a shit keeper at saving penalties, he gets nowhere near it.
I know, it was great, and I loved all the flip-flop comments of, you know, everybody hating on him, but they all wanted him to stay, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, Manny, such as yourself.
Would you put it this way? Here's another question for you. Would you take Gordon over the three keepers we've got?
What the fuck? The Kung Fu Man? No.
I would. Definitely would.
Everybody would. Louis would. They just won't admit it. Because he's thrown all his eggs in flip-flopping with Scott Brown. He can't double flip-flop.
When did I flip-flop? What did I say?
Oh, Scott Brown was imperious.
Never said that. Anyway, so yes, the last thing I wanted to say, Ayer steps up, smashes it in. The emotion out of him and the way he celebrated, absolute hero. I hope Christian Wolf feels that. I'm happy to flip-flop on Ayer. The guy is a hero. Just a fantastic day, an amazing day, an amazing achievement, quadruple treble. But I think now we, you know, the focus narrows ahead of the next couple of games. Obviously, we've got a difficult run coming up with the league, and obviously everything is kind of geared towards, as Eddie was saying, everything's kind of geared towards the game on the 2nd. We've got Ross County at home tomorrow, and then obviously Hamilton away on Boxing Day, and I think those are going to be difficult fixtures. Obviously, Ross County put us out of the cup recently, and you know, Hamilton away is just a potential banana skin that I'm a wee bit worried about personally. But you know, it is a good chance. Hopefully, now that they've had the achievement, everybody's on a high. The squad and Neil Lennon are going to be on a high after the weekend. Hopefully this should serve as well. I mean, my thought is that hopefully everything is just now on the 10. You know, all the focus now is on the 10. I know obviously we've got this year's Scottish Cup, but we focus now on the 10 and this run of fixtures. If we can get this right over the next 3-4 games, then we're right back in it again. And suddenly we're not in the kind of doomsday scenario. For the weekend, Eddie, you mentioned it there about it's really important that we're consistent in our lineup. Do you think that will happen? And, you know, what would that lineup be? I think we should all probably discuss what our ideal lineup would be at this point for both the Ross County and the Hamilton games. Do you want to start us off? Do you think we'll get it? And what would be your kind of back five, including a keeper, be?
I mean, it's hard to say that we would get it. No matter what we hear about, you know, sentimentality, or this is, you know, kind of swan song type thing, you know, nobody would be surprised if Brown started. I think ideally for me, right now, it would be Hazard and goals, Laxalt, IR, Julian, Frimpong, Calmac, Sorrow, Turnbull, Moy, Eddie Christie. So, or Christie, Eddie, Moy. But yeah, I just think that is probably our strongest lineup in my eyes. And I think there's not really too much reason to sway from that, really. The performances have shown to be positive with that particular lineup and those particular individual players. So for me, you know, obviously I wouldn't be surprised if Brown comes back in, Barkas comes back in, you know, like you can't be surprised anymore by that. You kind of just expect the worst and hope for the best. But yeah.
So Manny, what do you think? Do you think we'll see a consistent lineup now for the Rangers game?
I don't know. I think that's part of the uncertainty of where we're going. I mean, even though we kind of snuck over the line and the deficiencies were there, you would hope that the squad and the team would be galvanised by it. It could go either way. It could almost be like a, you know, the pressure and then the release, and it's difficult for them. You just don't know what Lennon's going to do.
He did mention that there was going to be some changes because I think some of the players had kind of tired after the game on Sunday, and obviously Brown's injured. Well, he's a doubt, a major doubt, I think, and Duffy's also a doubt.
I think if we're being honest, if we're talking about the changes, we're talking about the changes in the centre of the park. And do I want Sorrow and Turnbull back in? Of course I do. I think, well, Turnbull started, sorry, but do I want Sorrow back in for Brown? Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not saying it's simple that we've looked more secure when Sorrow started instead of Brown. It's not that simple. But I think he's played a large part in our shape. And for me, Sorrow should now start games. If Brown's playing, he should be coming on at the tail end of them. So, see the lineup that Eddie said, I wouldn't disagree one iota from that. I mean, it was great to see Micah Johnson back as well. I think Johnson could play his way back into this team.
I wonder if that...
Yeah. If Johnson, you know, appeared in that starting lineup, I wouldn't be disappointed by it. I think he might have a big part to play in the season, but generally speaking, as it stands, that's the team I would play as well. Sorrow for me has to start, and, you know, getting ahead of ourselves, I know it's only the 22nd. Sorrow starts at Ibrox. I don't care. You know, Brown's been chased about the Ibrox pitch recently, so the idea that they play him there for his experience doesn't really stand in much stead. Sorrow in, and we play him up until then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think Lennon's one chance of saving this season is in a Louis McCaffrey fashion, is Brown going under the bus. And he'd never ever say it, right? He would never say it, but I got a wee bit, I let my emotions get the better of me, and then really I was playing a guy that shouldn't have been in there, and actually I had a better chance, better back up in the bench, and I've realised that. I'm not going to talk you through it, but actually, as you say, Sirmani, the better way to use his minutes is 30 minutes at the end.
I wonder, right? And again, I'm just being like optimistic, right? I'm just trying to be optimistic, but I wonder if Neil Lennon, he will pull out, one of his really good defensive organised showings on the second. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it's probably worth talking about considering that the games up until then will all be geared towards it, right? But I just wonder if we'll see. We've seen it a few times in European games, probably more so, but we've seen it with Lennon that he can put out a very well-drilled, organised team that have a clear plan. We've just not seen it in a while. But I think it could be that we see it on the second. If there was, because Neil Lennon's focus now is all going to be geared towards that. I just wonder if that's what's going to happen. And if dropping Brown and accepting that Brown needs to come out of that team and Sorrow goes into it is actually something that he does. I honestly think it could be a turning point.
There's just no time to work on it, Louis. You know, I mean, he could do that. There's just no time to work on it.
You know, see, like there was a point in the season where I genuinely do think that was valid between in terms of like. You come back from a game on a Thursday night, you've got recovery on a Friday, it's light training and classroom stuff on a Saturday, then you're a game on a Sunday, and then it kind of repeats itself Monday, Tuesday, travel Wednesday out on Thursday. We've just had a week off. How have we not had a chance to work on defensive shape and set pieces? Like, it just, as I say, sometimes I think he just says stuff.
And there's different people there each week anyway, you know, whether it's through injury or selection or formation. So, you would hope so. You would definitely hope so. But, you know, like Sirmani said, you know, we don't know what he's going to do. We just know that we'll probably be surprised at some point. That's for sure.
Louis, can I just come in and play the clip? Lewis was at the press conference today and he talks about, what we can do from set pieces, and it just lets you know, we're obviously at the press conference and we want to make sure that we kind of represent the fans. So we asked a double-edged question. I'll just play that now.
Neil, congrats on Sunday. There was a moment that sort of got you on camera, taking it all in. How did it feel to write your name alongside some of the great Celtic managers lifting a treble? And can you use this to kick on?
Yeah, I think we can use it to kick on. And for me personally, it's a lifetime achievement, you know, to be up there with the great managers and the great players of this club. And, you know, to be the first in Scottish football to win the treble as a player and a manager is something very, very special for me when you think of the great players and managers, you know, over the last 120 years of Scottish football. So, yeah, it's a, you know, very unique moment, but, you know, there's a lot of help along the way. So I'm not finished yet. While I'm at peace with myself, I'm not finished yet. We still have a lot of work to do.
You mentioned the set pieces. What can you do to resolve this that we haven't tried already?
Listen, we've it's down to the players, you know, like individual responsibilities, you know, and we didn't have a problem with really last season. You know, and even some of the deliveries that have been scored against us, the deliveries haven't been great. You know, we've just not tracked either the first run or made the first contact or reacted to the second one, you know, and I was really disappointed with the two we conceded on Sunday. It's not as if we're getting cut open by teams and getting totally outplayed. You know, it just seems to be we're not dealing with balls in our box. So we actually did change the way we were marking from corners for a couple of games where we had one player zonal and the rest picking up. You know, and that still's not working. So we may look at zonal, half man marking. But again, it's down to the players. You got to go and want to head the ball in both boxes. They need to be better at that.
So Neil Lennon doesn't really know what the fuck's going on, but
half yeah. Zone, half man marking.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, it doesn't fill you. It doesn't really fill you with confidence on that, does it? Really?
Just not dealing with balls in the box. Yeah, that's quite an understatement.
I mean, I feel I need to mention it as well. I mean, Hazard, see for the first goal, Duffy. People were talking about Hazard and the way he dived for the ball. I mean, Duffy, I just staring at the ball yet again, and I'm just...
All he's got to do is jump there, really. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so, again, you know, you're talking about the positivity and everything, and you know, you need to be, but then it's about what happens from now going forward. And when he's saying stuff like that, a lot of people won't notice that today because they don't care because of what we did on Sunday. But you're just thinking, come on, man, you need more answers than that. You really, really do. And I'm going to go half zonal and half man marking.
Remember at half time I was like, oh, do you know what? Give him his credit. Duffy's had an okay game. He did fuck all to do. That's why he had an okay game. The guy, like, I'm sorry, Duffy should be nowhere near that team. He should go back to Brighton with our best wishes in January. And we're sorry that he had to come up without his kids and stuff with his dad made it emotionally really difficult. And I totally get it. It's not worked out. We picked the wrong player. It wasn't good emotionally for him. He is not good enough to be in that team.
I think, you know, obviously the two games coming up, I'm trying to be hopeful, trying to be as positive as I can and believe that this has been a wee bit of a burden lifted and we're going to see a bit of a different Celtic team come tomorrow night. And it's probably just wishful thinking, but we'll see what happens. I think in this immediate game, though, I don't think we're going to see the team that plays against Rangers, just purely because of injuries and kind of exhaustion from the weekend. I think we're going to see a lot of changes. But then that's the trouble as well, isn't it? Because let's face it, every game right now is a cup final and we have to win. There is no margin for error against Ross County or Hamilton. We just simply have to win. We've got loads of questions. Obviously, I assume, I don't know, the producer can maybe tell us. I assume that we're doing the Cynic Weekly next week and we'll be able to kind of preview the Rangers game before it happens.
Yeah, of course. That's good. 29th, yeah.
Yep, so we'll be back next week and kind of focus on that game then, if that's all right with everyone. But just a couple of comments from Twitter before we finish up. Sean asks, will the Cup win make a difference or are the cracks too deep in the search for the 10? Listen, I'm going to take that. As I just said, I'm trying to be hopeful that we're going to see a bit of a better Celtic. But fundamentally, I think Lennon does have to pick the right players, and he also has to come up with some sort of cohesive plan, which we've just heard. It doesn't really sound like he has. I totally agree. I want Sorrow in there. I don't want Brown in there, but I've just got a feeling, especially when it comes to the second, for example, he will be in there. What else have we got? So, Paul Curran says, is it too soon to mention that the second half and extra time was really poor on Sunday? Don't worry, Paul. I think Somani's got you covered there. Ian Duggan, Beans, Fat Boy Beans, he says, James Forrest has been deployed across varying positions under Lennon. Where do you see him improving this team? And why is he the best?
On the pitch. On the pitch. On the right wing ahead of Christie, who actually playing a player in a role that he can play. Right wing.
See, being serious for a second, do you think he has been a major loss?
Oh God, yeah. You think about all the, even when Forrest was having scratchy performances last season, see the amount of times he popped up with goals. Sermani's going to give the chat about
him. Sermani's not having it. No, that's too positive.
He'd be dragged down like the rest of them. He has been missed.
I'm not
width on the right and the left.
I'm not saying Forrest not being missed. I'm saying that this was a team that was set up to be 3-5-2. And Forrest wouldn't have been
missed. Forrest wouldn't have got a game.
Has he been missed when we've reverted back and we've had no wingers? Of course he has. I'm a fan of James Forrest. I've criticised him when he's deserved to be criticised, but James Forrest's a good player. But come on, man. See if the 3-5-2 had worked. Forrest's absence wouldn't have been felt, if it had been set up correctly. And Louis, did you think the second half and extra time were good? Yeah, flip-flopper. I'm not going to forget tonight, by the way, wee man. I'm going to call you out. Call me out. I'll call you out. Anything, son. I'm leaning
technicality, Terry there. Well, if we're going to play 3-5-2, he wouldn't actually be playing. Anyway, listen, I've got a question for you to shut you up. Joe Coyle asks, if you could pluck one player who had a specific role in a Celtic team from days gone by and plonk him in his prime into the current team to solve a specific problem, and he's also said that Henrik's not allowed, who would it be and why? Would it be Roy Aitken? Honourable mentions McStay and Agat. So you've just went for Paul Lambert. Gal also says that's his cousin and he's a top guy. Thanks, Joe, for the question. Excellent question. Go for it, Somani.
When I seen Roy Aitken, he was past his best, so I'm not going to pick that. I don't think that right back is as big a problem as some people are saying, so I wouldn't put Agat in there. Now, we're talking about Sorrow taking over for Scott Brown. See, if you had a peak Paul Lambert in the middle of that park, he would make a huge difference to the side. So if I could pick one player from what I've seen,
you've went for a hun. Excellent.
Yes.
Eddie Walsh has won it on the chat, though. Well done, Eddie.
Albie? Respectfully disagree there, Edward.
I mean, it's fine, but who would you pick right now over Mjalby, centre-back-wise?
No, if we could pick one player, I think that somebody to protect that back line would be more important than somebody in that back line. That's my feeling.
We have that. It's Ismail Assara. He's there to protect everything.
You've championed for the last hour.
Yes. Rightly so.
I think I'm going to put my neck in the line here and say that I think Pete Paul Lambert was better than Ismail Assara.
Well, I mean, Pete Paul Lambert won the Champions League, to be fair to him.
Well, exactly. Mjalby was shite. No, I'm only kidding.
Right. I think the biggest shocker is he didn't put Paul McStay in that team. I thought he was your man.
Paul McStay was my man, but someday to fix this team right now, I would take Mjalby. I'm agreeing with Eddie. I would take Lambert. I just think as somebody who could control that midfield and protect that back line. He's the first player that came to my head. So
would you take him in the dugout though, Christopher? Sorry, he's such a bad manager. He's got the COVID as well. He's got COVID right now. Get well soon, Paul Lambert. Please never manage Celtic.
He's the complete package. I'll say this for Paul Lambert. I would take him over Owen Coyle.
What a shame for Owen, man. That would be
not saying much.
I mean, he knocked us back once, but if he ever had that chance again, he'd take it. We've got another question from Virgil, which we're not going to answer just now. It says players to sell and positions to strengthen in January. I promise you we'll come back to that nearer the time and once the transfer window opens, if that's okay. This has been great. Listen, it's been a massive achievement. I think it's something that I certainly maybe didn't really quite think about until we've actually done it. But my God, we've won four trebles in a row, absolutely dominated life for four seasons. It's something that we're going to look back on and we're going to tell our grandchildren about in years ahead. So it's a massive, massive achievement.
Do you know the thing is that there's nothing that you can say about, oh, it's in Scotland. Like, there's not a team in Burundi or Burkina Faso or Indonesia that can go and win 12 in a row.
I was doing my final wee fucking bit.
Well, you can go back into it. I'm just saying, it is an incredible... The fact that it's not happened anywhere and then nobody's even get close to it. Do your final wee thing.
Do you want to host the fucking podcast now? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Right, so anyway, this has been the Cynic Weekly. Eddie, thank you very much for joining us, my man. You've been fantastic.
Really appreciate it, Louis. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas, my man. Ian, other than that last fuck up there at the end, you've had a solid kind of 60 minutes.
Thank you for having me, and it makes a change for me fucking not Christian Wolf's wee bits that he has to think about before he comes on. So, you know, sorry, Louis.
Samani, you've got a lot wrong tonight, but listen, I love you anyway, and we've had such a great Alas episode, you know, there's no hatred here.
Louis, you've deflected your pish onto me tonight, wee man. That Scott Brown flip-flop was utterly classic.
What did I say? Scott Brown, he's wonderful. Where was that?
Louis, the listeners will judge for themselves. I love you, no matter what, but you are a flip-flopping wee diddy.
get Brown out by any means necessary. If that's not the biggest flip-flop I've ever heard in my life, I don't know what it is. But anyway, listen, this has been the Cynic Weekly. We'll be back next week after Christmas, obviously. I think from everybody who's been on the Cynic Weekly this year, I think we would all wish you a very Merry Christmas. I hope you have a great one with your families. Although everything is very different this year, I hope everybody stays safe and has a great one. And we will be back next week as usual to speak ahead of the Rangers game. Okay, so everybody stay safe, enjoy yourself, and we'll speak to you down the road.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.